Today on CyberWork, I speak with XM Cyber's Menachem Shifran about cloud security. Menachem tells us about the work of project manager and product manager within a cybersecurity space, how the haste to migrate to the cloud can unnecessarily leave vulnerabilities wide open, and why a cloud security expert also needs to be a good storyteller. That's all on today's episode of CyberWork. Welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. Each week, we talk with a different industry thought leader about cybersecurity trends, the way those trends affect the work of InfoSec professionals, and offer tips for breaking in or moving up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. Menachem Shifran is VP of Product for XM Cyber, the multi-award-winning leader in cyber attack path management. He has more than 15 years of experience in product management and cybersecurity and has managed complex products ranging from cybersecurity and homeland security to DevOps automation and mobile applications. Prior to his roles in product management, Menachem served for 5 years in the IDF's Elite Intelligent Unit 8200, where he served both as a researcher and as a team leader. So today, our main topic is we're going to talk about the cloud, specifically securing the right parts of the cloud, and even more specifically, the fact that there isn't much consensus on how to secure the cloud. So we're going to, I'm sure we'll solve it all at the end of this hour. Menachem, thank you for joining us. Welcome to CyberWork.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I always like to get a sense of our guests' passion. So I always like to ask, where did you get first interested in computers and tech? And when did you also get first interested in cybersecurity? What was the initial attraction? I know your college degrees were in mathematics and music, but were you also working with computers and such at the time?
So actually, the beginning of my interest in computers and networking actually came as a child. I think I was, you know, seventh grade or so. My dad was also a computer geek.
Okay.
Really, you know, we had internet at home. We had dial-ups and he used to talk to me and explain, you know, about, you know, when he was younger, you know, there was the blue box and how you and phone and hacking phone systems and things of that nature that used to be in the past. I don't know if any of the listeners, you know, still know what we're talking about.
Are you talking about phone freaking or?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
That's I've read about it. Yeah. Old.
That's old school,
and he used to talk about that, and I used to be excited, and you know, we had a computer at home, and I was starting to play around and see what I can do, and really, I remember that, you know, when I was in around seventh grade, my mother used to work in the NIH, you know, the National Health Institute of Health. So when she was there, I remember that during the weekends, my dad used to say, we can go to mom's office. There is a T3 connection over there.
Oh,
so
wow,
basically,
yeah.
You know, that's a 34 megabits. That sounds
fast.
So
as it go- yeah. Oh, yeah. At the time, that was lightning quick.
That was lightning. And it was like exciting. I can go and I can browse the internet. You know, you click on a page and it actually loads. So that was.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
So, you know, when you have dial-ups, you know, that's super exciting. So really, I think on those days, I really started to get into computers and into networking and working with my dad, setting up the home network and things of that nature, which was really, really cool. All the way until I actually reached the age of 18, where I finished high school, and then I went to the military service. Now,
right.
In the military service, they're coming and actually giving you different types of exams and trying to figure out where they're going to place you, if you're going to be in a combat unit or if you're going to be in a tech unit. And and I came and they started asking me, and I said, oh, yeah, I know. I'm using, there wasn't Wireshark. It used to be Ethereal and Packetizer and different types. And I understand, you know, a little bit about networking and so forth. And that's how eventually I rolled up into 8200, where I really got into different types of, you know, advanced networking and what we call cybersecurity.
Yeah.
So really, that's kind of how I started in cybersecurity and in tech, way before my college degree, which came up only later.
Yeah. I believe you're not our first guest that that got their start in tech through their military service in Israel. So that's pretty cool. That seems to be a very common pathway and a very good one for that matter. So one of the things that I mentioned or that I noted in your your education and so forth when you were with the Israeli Defense Force is that you did work as a project manager. So project manager is one of those. Within a cybersecurity sphere is one of those career paths that not every cybersecurity aspirant thinks of, but can you talk about your work as a PM at this time and how it fed into the type of security and product management work you did in future positions?
So I'll separate it into two parts. So in the military, some of the stuff that we did, I was doing different types of project management and really project management is a cool way of trying to figure out how you actually create sometimes it's a product, sometimes it's, you know, trying to adopt a new platform, a new system.
Right.
And it's a really great way to actually learn about both, you know, seeing the technology part, but also working it on, you know, how you actually create it into process in the organization. So I think it's really a good and great way. You know, because you can, when you're looking at how you start in cybersecurity, so many people start as SOC analysts and things of that nature.
Yep.
But really coming and saying, I'm going to help adopt, you know, a new EDR in the company.
Yep.
And it's a process. It's not, you both need to understand very well how the EDR is working. You need to understand how to orchestrate the different places in the company and really create a process that will drive value. So definitely project management is a great way to expand and learn and get into various places in cybersecurity and in tech in general.
Yeah.
And I think that from that, I've actually pivoted into product management.
Okay.
Which in those days, product management was a bit more vague than it is day to day. Half the people I speak to are, you know, I'm a product manager or I want to be a product manager. I remember when I came out of the military, I said, well, the specific type of security things that I've done in the military are not things that I think exist in the civilian world. And then I was trying to figure out, okay, I don't want to be a developer. I'm not a QA person. I'm not a salesperson. What else is there in the industry to do? And then I got offered, I got approached by a company through a friend and they said, you want to be a product manager? And I've asked, you know, what is a product manager? What do you do? And I figured out it's, you know, it's similar to a bit of project management, but a lot more about understanding, you know, customer needs and connecting them and really taking and connecting the technology part to the business or to, you know, to the customer needs.
Okay.
And that's really interesting because that's something that really, I think in the core of almost every position in cybersecurity, that what helps you drive excellence. I mean, if you're coming and not just looking at it from a technology perspective, but also understanding the people and the processes in the organization. So kind of like a weird way to get into product management.
That's good. I was going to ask you about the distinction. So I'm glad you jumped right into it. So you're saying basically like you'll have, you know, this product that you are sort of overseeing that, you know, inside and out, backwards and forwards. And then you talk with clients and they say, well, how do we integrate it in this way? Or how do we make it work for this specialized department that doesn't necessarily use it in a conventional way? And you sort of find solutions for them. Am I on the right track?
You basically trying to find solutions, but really in many cases, it starts from identifying the real pain points. Now, in many cases, you know, people are coming and they're telling you, well, I need the product to also do A, B, and C. And one of the key things that a product manager is doing is trying to understand, okay, so what are you actually trying to solve? I mean, it's not necessarily, you know,
just plug it in and it tells you what you need to know, right?
So that's the idea. That's what product managers do, is they try to understand the pain points of the customers and really direct the development of the product so that it will be able to fulfill those to the best way. So,
Okay. So to that end, what is your average workday like as VP of product for XM Cyber? Are there certain tasks that you're always working on, and how much time is split between working with clients and working with tech and the teams?
So really, I would say that as a VP of product today, I'm working a lot more with, you know, with the customers, with the customer, but not just with the actual customers. I'm also speaking with the customer success team, with the sales team, with different prospects, with industry analysts, speaking with Gartner. And I think that would basically consume, I would say, 60% of my time today. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the time is actually speaking either with my team members, that are to making sure that we're all aligned and we understand and we agree to the vision of where we want to take the product. Mm-hmm. And with the technology folks, with the R&D, in order to make sure that, you know, they're actually building it in the right way. Or sometimes they come and tell you, well, you know, I can't do it this way, but perhaps, you know, we can do it a little bit different. And you'll be, R&D folks are usually very, very smart guys. And if you actually help them understand what is the problem that they're trying to solve, sometimes they'll surprise you with ideas of how to actually solve it in a way, in a smarter way. So it's always great to also listen and not just trying to explain to them, okay, this is what the customer needs, but helping listening to them and feeling what they actually, you know, what are their ideas of how to solve the problems.
Okay. So you're still doing a little bit of project management in that regard. Like you're still sort of organizing the process of updating and improving and so forth. Is that right?
Yeah.
So into it a little bit.
Obviously, you know, it's less and less that I'm actually, you know, writing specs and designing and stuff like that, but I'm always trying to make sure that I'm still both doing that at least a little bit, you know, that some of the features I'll work on designing them and that I'll actually, you know, do the full process, you know, in order to not lose the touch. But but more and more you're speaking with the customers, with the customer success team and trying to understand, you know, the pain points that they're having.
Yeah. Now, do you feel that you have to keep up with the technology, you know, just in the greater world to sort of make sure that you're, you know, that you guys are implementing the correct solutions to whatever products that you're working in?
I think that I'm wondering if it's a question that if you ask someone that is passionate about, you know, tech and cybersecurity, that's not telling you, part of what I do all the time is making sure that I'm keeping up to date.
So, learning more,
And learning more. And really, I think that's the essence of, and one of the nice things that I like about this industry, both the tech industry in general and cybersecurity, is the fact that it's always changing and you always need to learn and understand and make sure that you're up to date. So, you know, as a product manager for cybersecurity, I need to read all the time, you know, blogs and things about attack techniques, about different, you know, what was released in the latest Black Hat, different vulnerabilities, incidents that are happening, but also what's in the market, what are the solutions there are, you know, reading, you know, reports by analysts in the industry, keeping in track, what are the different solutions that customers have? So, you know, you won't be surprised by understanding, oh, there's a new company that is doing something that can solve and help, you know, maybe we can collaborate, maybe we can do something together. So definitely all the time, reading and learning is a major process that we do.
Absolutely. I just want to make sure I figured as much, but I wanted to hear it from you. So as I said at the top of the show, our main topic today is cloud security. So as some supplemental research you sent along, a June 2021 study by the International Data Corporation, or IDC, noted that of the companies they surveyed, a whopping 98% had been hit by a data breach. I mean, this is a staggering number. Can you help break down what this actually means in a practical way?
So I'll separate that into two parts. So first, you know, we're always seeing reports in the industry coming out about, you know, different types of statistics and what they're, you know, what they're actually seeing. And this is great because it helps us share knowledge and learn. But you always need to actually look and try to understand how to actually interpret the data, where the data is actually coming from. So it's important to look if that survey is a questionnaire that someone, you know, that you've asked 200, 300, 400, 500 CISOs that are super busy and are basically trying to, okay, let's answer this question. Okay, A, B, C. And then you need to understand, obviously they're not lying, but you need to understand that they're interpreting questions and there's nuances and they're trying to figure out versus, you know, places that are putting up a research or a report that is coming out based on, you know, incident response statistics that they're doing. If we take, for example, the Verizon data breach investigation report, they're actually documenting how many incidents we got reported from such and such that happened. So trying to work more. Now, both have places in the industry and both bring value, but you need to understand the nuances in order to understand how to interpret the data. So if I'm not mistaken, that IDC survey is a questionnaire that they've sent to 200 leading CISOs.
Yep.
And then, you know, I'm trying to think about it and feeling, obviously, you know, no one is actually, if 98% of those CISOs had a major cloud data breach, you know, that's probably what we're going to hear out in the news all day long. You know, this company was breached. This company was breached.
Yeah. Yeah, if 98% of companies suffered a critical data breach, I think the entire industry would be in free fall. So, can you explain a bit about the difference between what these critical and non-critical data breaches? I mean, like what are they reporting that is not, you know, we got, you know, completely ransomware, completely hacked, completely invaded, you know, whatever. What are these lower level ones like? What are they seeing?
So basically, we need to understand that attackers are constantly attacking organizations. In many cases, it's even automated processes that are trying to gain, you know, initial foothold. And there is a continuous process of cleaning out your environment from all of those different incidents.
Yeah.
So my assumption, because obviously I don't know what went in the head of someone that chose that answer, is that they're referring to the fact that they had different incidents of someone getting some foothold into their cloud environment, which makes sense because there are so many places to make mistakes. But it doesn't mean that someone was able to actually get to the critical assets, to the PCI data, to personal health data or whatever, and steal that or damage that or whatever. So we need to make the difference between incidents that are happening every day. And, you know, that's kind of what we need to agree that that's part of life. You know, it's always happening. Obviously, we need to try to make sure that there are less and less, but that's part of life. And critical data breaches that are basically an attacker being able to reach, you know, the PCI data and still credit card numbers. So that's the main difference.
Yeah. And, you know, we had a previous guest talk about how there are certain sort of attack groups that don't even actively exploit vulnerabilities, but they'll just compile vulnerabilities in major companies and then sort of sell the list on the dark web and say, if you're interested in going after this company or that company, we found this and this or whatever. So I think there's so many things. I mean, just because someone got in there doesn't mean anyone can actually do anything with it, right?
Yep. And it's really it's interesting to see how, you know, how the market, you know, the attackers market is evolving on that, in that aspect. And you can see, you know, if you're looking at ransomware, so, you know, we have ransomware as a service. You know, people are telling you, you'll give us the initial foothold. We're going to outsource getting the initial foothold. We'll do the entire operation, finding the path and getting to the critical assets and encrypting and demanding the ransom. And we'll give you a revenue share because you gave us the initial foothold. They're understanding that that's something that happens. Mm-hmm. And the main capability is actually the inside pivoting and reaching and finding the critical assets and that part of the
organization. Escalating. So in our introduction to this episode, when we were talking beforehand, your colleague at XM Cyber, Zur Ulyanovsky, said that this problem will only increase because, quote, nobody is completely sure how to secure the cloud. Can you talk more about this? What are some of the major mistakes you see with companies who are trying to secure their assets on the cloud? And what in your mind is a more secure way to do things that's not being done now?
So I think, you know, when we're talking and saying that people are not sure how to secure the cloud, I think the first thing is a knowledge gap, both about how the cloud actually works. You know, for many people, it's so new, they don't understand what's the differences. Are those just servers in the cloud,
or a difference from our backup tapes in our office and things like that.
Which they're not. There's a lot more possibilities, both to make things more secure, but also to make more mistakes.
Yep.
And also there is the flexibility and the ease that the cloud is actually bringing is creating a situation that in many cases, you know, security folks just don't know exactly what are they trying to protect. You know, it's, mm-hmm. you're not trying to protect everything in the cloud. It's not, it's not all the same. And in many cases, the security team are coming late to the game. Yep. Where the R&D are, you know, moving things to the cloud, moving things fast. And in many cases, you know, when you're moving things fast, what do you want to do? You want to make sure that it works. And you want to make sure that it works. How do you make sure that it works? You give it just more permissions, you know?
Yep, more accessible to everybody. It, yeah, yeah.
If we'll just give right access to everyone on that, it will work, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And, I'm sure that you remember installing, I don't know, some solution with a database in the 90s or in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And you were like figuring out what permissions do they need to do? Does the program need? Does the web server need to the MSSQL database? Maybe I'll just give it everything.
You just throw the gates open. Work. Yeah, right.
And that's exactly what's happening again now. In the cloud, people want to move services quickly to the cloud. They want to do a lift and shift. Mm-hmm. They're giving excessive permissions. Yep. And you know, in the cloud, everything is identities basically. Everything you give there is an EC2. You have it's attached to a role. And what is the identity that? What are the permissions? And if you give it, you know, permission to do pretty much everything, then the risk from that machine is also escalating. So that's one of the things. So basically, I think that. The security people, they don't know what they want to secure. Mm-hmm. And then they're coming and facing with the situation where the R&D are already moving things to the cloud. Yeah. And now they need to chase and try to say, okay, do you actually need those permissions? And is it something that is needed? And obviously the answer will be, yeah, of course they need that permission. You know, it needs it to work. I was trying to make sure that things work and that's how it worked.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, so definitely.
So it seems like a good first step would be to just sort of flip the roles and start with, you know, security sort of doing a check of what's going to be migrated to the cloud and then making sort of recommendations to R&D before they even begin. I mean, I'm obviously not everyone's like super stoked on that, but can you sort of walk me through like a flow chart of what you think would be like a safer, you know, sort of cycle of teams?
Yeah. So ideally, you know, you have the security people and you decide, you know, who are the people that are going to work on cloud security and you're going to give them a little bit of training and then they're going to create guidance and they're going to work with people. But, you know, I think it is not an ideal world. And in many cases, you know, R&D are going to run and IT are going to start moving things to the cloud. And for that, we need to understand that there are tools that the cloud providers are creating in order to help us identify and make sure that we're trying to make things more secure. So you know, obviously, ideally, you'll first come to the security. They will tell you exactly what you need to know. You'll build it securely. And it's actually happening. I've spoken with a customer of ours a few weeks ago, and he mentioned that, you know, they had a messy cloud account.
Okay.
That basically worked the way, you know, R&D were moving things to the cloud and they decided, you know what, we're going to do it fresh. We're going to do it new. We're opening a new account.
Okay.
And everything you want to move, we're going to make sure that you're doing it correctly.
Nice.
And now they're in the process of re-migrating to the cloud.
Yeah.
Basically. So those things happen, but obviously that's a lot of effort. And in many places, you're going to need to chase the R&D and see how you identify and fix things. Afterward,
that leads nicely to my next question, which, you know, I think one of the things, you know, that R&D and others are going to push back on is that making changes like these probably require a significant amount of resources and money, time and intention and maybe even downtime of your system. So you know, what kind of downtime can one expect when making these kinds of security changes? And how do you make a board or C-suite understand the future benefits of sort of being safe up front, even if it means a little more hassle or a little more resources or a little more work or even a little less value?
So I'm not sure that necessarily you're going to have, you know, downtime as in, you know, systems not working. You know, if you do things correctly, you can migrate. There are wonderful, you know, technologies today. You know, you have blue-green deployments. You can make sure that you move things you know, slowly, but it is definitely a lot of effort that you need to invest in order to actually analyze and do things correctly. Now, I would separate it into two parts. You know, first, you want to make sure what you're protecting are the important stuff and not just everything that you you can. You know, there's it's not everything. Not everything is created equal in our IT infrastructure.
Right.
And you want to focus on how to make sure that the critical aspects are more secure. Mm-hmm. And obviously, there is an entire process of how do you go about identifying what's important for the business.
Right.
But once you have that and you're working in a more focused manner, then it is easier to actually help by explaining what are the implications of the changes that you want to make. Why do you want to make those changes? And, you know, you mentioned explaining to the C-suite and selling it to the C-suite, to the C-level. Basically, right. You know, if you're coming and giving them numbers, you know, I've seen CISOs that present to management and they're saying, yeah, we have a dashboard showing how many vulnerabilities, critical vulnerabilities we have, and how wide is the EDR deployed, and things of that nature. And really, that's data. If you're starting and telling them, well, we actually want to invest and make those changes, because we've seen that it's not that hard to actually, you know, if someone gain access to whatever, it's not hard for an attacker to pivot and get to the credit card data or to our manufacturing platform or to something Absolutely. That they care about from the business. And the more you turn it into something that they can relate to and they can understand, and you create a story around it, the easier it is to sell it. And it's not just for the C-level, even if you're coming to IT and telling them, you know, I need you to apply a patch. And they'll tell you, yeah, we'll do it when we get the time. But if you're actually explaining to them, you need to understand that, you know, that patch will basically make sure that, you know, that server will not be able, you won't be able to exploit. And from that server, there are very strong credentials that, you know, would pivot the way to someone to compromise the entire network. Now they realize and they're saying, oh, you know, that is important. You know, I am going to do it.
First faster. Priority. Yeah,
exactly. So really talking and explaining, you know, and not just giving, this is the things that needs to happen, really helps promote those things.
Yeah. And well, I think also it comes down to sort of taking a breath rather than going for speed. I mean, you know, we had cloud people in the past saying, if you're not migrated to the cloud or migrating to the cloud now, you're 10 steps behind. And so I think there's a lot of that sort of ingrained fear of being left behind and getting things going too quickly. So I guess rather than downtime, it sounds like more rather than everyone saying, okay, we got to do this right now, then just take a deep breath and sort of start your plan a little quicker so that, you know, rather than worry about we have to have it done by X date, maybe push that, you know, a week ahead and say, if we front load this a week early, it's going to be a lot safer in the end.
Definitely.
Okay. This is obviously the CyberWork podcast. So we like to, whatever we're talking about, we also want to talk about the business value of it. So for listeners who are currently, on their cybersecurity journeys early on, building their skills for future career, what types of activities, accomplishments, reading, education, do they need to work in cloud security in 2021 and beyond?
So I think first thing is they need to learn and try to understand about, you know, the cloud and how it works. Mm-hmm. You know, generally, you're not just learning about security, you're learning about, you know, IT. Think about it, if we compare it to, you know, 20 years ago, people used to learn about networking and then they learned about security, and it goes hand in hand. So you need to learn about all the benefits and different offerings and how the cloud is behaving differently. And then you really need to start, you know, following what's happening in the industry. Following what's happening in the industry is listening to podcasts such as, you know, CyberWorks. It is about reading blogs, going on Twitter. It's amazing how much talks the security industry is doing, you know, on Twitter, and how much you can actually learn and follow and really be passionate about learning the skills, the capabilities, the attack techniques that are happening. Now, it's not necessarily that you need to, that everyone that wants to go into cloud security needs to actually, you know, be a reverse engineering that understand exactly all the bits and pieces of every attack. But you know, you can understand the story, you can understand what is happening, the different techniques, what attackers are actually targeting, and how it relates to the technology and the differences in the cloud. So that's I think one thing that people need to understand, you know, the continuous learning that they need to do and educating themselves. That's what I would say.
So speaking as someone who I'm assuming hires people to do this sort of work, if you wanted to hire someone to work alongside you or you know, beneath you, what would you absolutely need to see, you know, in their cover letter, on their resume, in their CV, whatever, that sort of showed off the things they could do or the interests or obsessions that drive them?
So obviously it depends to what position I'm recruiting. But definitely you want people that have passionate about what they do. You want people that, you know, that they can learn and they can be flexible. You need people, and it's something that we don't put enough emphasis upon, can try to actually understand that in the end, it's people that we're working with, not just technology. You know, it's you might be the most educated person about cybersecurity, or, you know, be the best, you know, whatever, the best product manager. Well, product manager, it's going to be hard if you don't understand how to work with people. But, you know, be technically very, very strong. But you need to understand that you need to actually create process. And, you know, you speak with CISOs and they tell you, well, obviously I can try to fight my way and say, well, we need to do A, B, and C and change, you know. But if you're coming and understand that you're working with people and you understand how to create the process and build the credit, the credibility, so that people want to work and want to make the changes, just like what we mentioned about, you know, the vulnerability and asking the IT to patch it. You know, if you're coming and telling, those are the list of vulnerabilities you need to patch.
Yeah,
that's not going to work. You need, so I'm going to look for someone that can actually work and understand and relate to people, and and you know, those soft skills are, I think, very, very centralized when looking into hiring.
I hear that a lot, that the importance of storytelling, and I think you illustrated that really well. That, you know, I'm not just telling you to download this critical patch. I'm saying by doing this, you shut down these particular threat areas and so forth, and not everyone has that, but everyone could strengthen that aspect of their work.
And it's a skill.
So looking towards the future, how, if at all, has cloud security changed with the increasing fracturization of the workspace due to what is looking to be at least a measure of permanent work from home going forward in the future?
So I think that, you know, work from home, I'm not sure that, you know, for the cloud, it didn't really change significantly, you know, the way that people are working in the cloud. Because in the end, if you're working from the office or if you're working from home, the cloud is not
even wrong there either way.
It's there either way. But I think
there's more inputs happened, though, right?
There is an acceleration of moving to the cloud. People are saying, okay, I'm already working from home. Instead of investing in more VPNs and in my data center and things, we'll just shift things to the cloud faster. So I think that's really what we've seen, that work from home helped create more, help people, you know, they needed to choose. Do I want to invest more in VPNs, or do I want to accelerate my moving to the cloud? And obviously they're looking forward. They said, let's accelerate my moving to the cloud. And now you have more SaaS products, you have more, you know, cloud capabilities that you're using. And really, I think that's how we've seen that work from home accelerated the digital transformation and the moving to the cloud.
Okay. That's a great answer. And so I want to wrap up today. Thank you again for your time. As we wrap up, tell us about XM Cyber and what services you offer to your customers.
Okay, excellent. So XM Cyber is an attack path management platform. So basically what it means is that we actually build, you can think about it as we generate this big graph of potential attack path, how an attacker can pivot from different initial footholds that we talked about that exist, you know, all the time, towards the critical assets. And in that way, you can actually start measuring, you know, and doing this storytelling that we talked about of, okay, how can an attacker, and how hard it will be for him to reach the SAP servers or to reach the personal data that we have and things of that nature. And we're doing it both in on-prem, in enterprise environments, but also in cloud environments. And also, which is quite interesting, in the in-between, in the hybrid place. So we can actually, and it's really interesting to see how you can actually see an attack path going from a random workstation, pivoting in the enterprise in the on-prem network until they found access keys to AWS, and then pivoting to the cloud and so forth. And really, I think that in many cases, attacks on cloud environments are actually starting from the on-prem, starting from, you know, the phishing is still the number one way that people get into organizations. Right. And then they work their way until they reach someone from DevOps, got access keys. And now they're entering the cloud and trying to escalate their privileges. So really that's what XM Cyber is actually bringing to the table, looking at it from the attacker perspective, building this graph of how the attacker can pivot. And with that, you can both estimate the risk, but also prioritize your remediation efforts and making sure that you are continuously improving your security posture.
Yeah, that I'm imagining it in my head. I'm seeing something like a ventilation system or something. It's like if the attacker comes in here, they can only get so far before they hit a dead end or something.
Yeah, and really that's one of the it's interesting because you can actually try to see how in many cases sometimes there is something that would look like a very, very critical risk. But in the end, you know, there's a critical vulnerability and everybody's talking about, print nightmare. But, you know, on a specific machine, you know, print nightmare not necessarily might actually be able to allow to help the attacker pivot towards a critical asset. So that's important in that case. Okay. On the other hand, you might see, you know, another issue that will, you know, give you a root user or a domain admin or whatever. So it's very interesting to see how, when you're looking at it in a bigger picture, you can understand priorities better. So
interesting. So, all right, one last question. If our listeners want to learn more about Menachem Shafran or XM Cyber, where can they go online?
So obviously, XM Cyber, there's a website and there's a newsletter that we're sending out about new blogs that our research team is publishing and things of that nature. Me personally, I have a Twitter account that I need to be more active. I'm usually reading a lot and less writing, but definitely my Twitter or LinkedIn, and I'll be happy to, you know, to discuss with people about cybersecurity issues and their challenges.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Menachem, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate talking to you.
Thank you.
And as always, thank you to everyone who is listening, watching, and supporting the show. New episodes of the CyberWork podcast are available every Monday at 1 p.m. Central, both on video at our YouTube page and on audio wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. I'm excited to announce that our InfoSec Skills platform will be releasing a new challenge every month with 3 hands-on labs to put your cyber skills to the test. Each month, you'll build new skills ranging from secure coding to penetration testing to advanced persistent threats and everything in between. Plus, we're giving away more than $1,000 worth of prizes each month. Go to infosecinstitute.com/challenge and get started right now. Thank you once again to Menachem Shafran, and thank you all so much for watching and listening. We will speak to you next week. How about some free cybersecurity training resources for you and your team? Just go to infosecinstitute.com/free to get ebooks, training guides, and more than 100 cybersecurity training courses, all free for CyberWork listeners. Go to infosecinstitute.com/free and start learning crucial new skills today.